Okay, we are back here at the WGXC morning show. I am so elated to have Chris Payson is on with me, a trumpeter that I was lucky enough to see this weekend at the Hilo. In actuality, I have to be truthful, I wasn't planning on seeing him, but I went downtown, I walked down Main Street, and then I passed the Hilo, and I was immediately stopped as I just passed it. I stopped and took two steps back, and then I leaned back to look into the Hilo, and then I stood there for a minute or so, and I was enamored, and I just went right in, and I went to the front, and I stayed for the whole show. And Chris, I am so happy to have you here today on WGXC. Thank you for joining me this morning.
And well, thanks for having me.
We do have
nice to be invited.
Thank you. We have some things to talk about, but I wanted to start out with one of your songs from your album Detour Ahead, and I think we decided that we were going to play Jackhammer. And do you want to give us a little information on this song and what you were telling me about this?
Well, you know, these are all mostly originals that I composed back when I was you know, a wee thing in my 20s.
Okay.
And recorded in as when I was in my 20s, and I assembled a really magnum assortment of musicians to be on this album, starting with the great saxophonist Steve Slagle, who basically made his bones playing with Carl LeBlay, pianist Benny Green, who has had a career playing with Art Blakey and Betty Carter, nice. Rufus Reed, who is one of the best bass players on the planet, and Danny Richmond, who was Charles Mingus's drummer for most of Mingus's career. And, you know, they were all very enthused about the project and played their asses off. And, well, you judge for yourself.
Right.
You know, but there again, I was just a wee thing at the time. And,
well, and even looking at your biography, I mean, you're originally from Chicago, right?
Well, I was born in Chicago.
Born in Chicago, yeah. But then you moved to the city.
Well, we lived in lived in a suburb of Baltimore for you know, kind of my early elementary school life, and then we moved to a suburb of New York where there was a music program, and I chose to play the trumpet and started taking lessons. And
at age 6, right?
No, at age 9, actually.
Age 9, okay.
And, you know, started taking lessons, and apparently I got good enough that people paid attention to what I was doing.
Very much so. Well, we'll be right back, and we'll talk more about that, but let's get started here with Jackhammer, okay? So we will be right back.
Thank you.
Benny Green solo, man.
Okay.
Benny Green playing is...
Okay. Okay, we're back here. I think we're back here. There we go. All right, we are back here. And so what were you saying about this... Let me turn this down here. I'm so sorry to be slightly confused.
No, that's good like that.
Okay, there we go. So what were you just saying?
No, just that Benny Green plays great on this side.
And you said you did this when you were in your early 20s?
In mid-20s, yeah.
Right.
Yeah, I had already been on the road, you know, with a couple of different groups. And, you know, all my friends were recording CDs, and I managed to scrape together the money to... pay for the studio time and whatnot and pay the musicians. And it seemed to me I'd been writing a lot of music that it was a good time to record something. So that's what I did.
I don't know if you were able to hear the beginning of my show, but I played Leo Kottke. And Neva was telling me that she had heard that in the early 70s when she was seeing, I believe you said silent films, right? In Jersey. And she said that she was, she had an epiphany when she heard him. And I guess I wanted to talk to you, too. What were some of the artists that really were, like, really caught you at the beginning that you were pretty much enamored by and just that brought you to where you are now that were major influences to you?
Well, when I was a kid, as a nine-year-old first studying trumpet, I heard swing music and Harry James and, you know, there was a radio station where we lived at the time in Rockland County that came out of Mount Kisco, WRVR, that played a lot of swing music early in the morning. And, you know, I would lay in bed listening to my transistor radio and hear this stuff. And, you know, it kind of gave me a sound concept and, it fueled some enthusiasm for playing the instrument,
right?
The trumpet. Harry James was a virtuoso on the instrument throughout his career. I did end up going to see him when I was in high school. I still have an autographed menu from the performance, but I was somewhat disappointed with him in terms of comparing the way he played then to the way he played in his early career. But that didn't dampen my enthusiasm for the trumpet. I had already very quickly moved on to other greats of the instrument as well as of jazz. You know, in terms of the trumpet, you know, discovering Clifford Brown, discovering Dizzy Gillespie, discovering Lee Morgan, discovering Fats Navarro, discovering Miles Davis, Freddie Hubbard, Woody Shaw, Kenny Wheeler, you know, were all epiphanies to me. Not to mention the fact that, for the most part, in terms of my approach to the instrument, I've actually modeled a lot of my playing off of saxophone players, John Coltrane, a number of different saxophone players, Archie Shepp, Ornette Coleman. You know, the list, of course, is endless. Dexter Gordon, actually.
Right.
You know, it's like... How do you play the trumpet like Dexter Gordon played the tenor saxophone? You can't, really.
Right.
But there's just something in his approach to time that I've found resonates with me. And, you know, where he can play a really fast tempo and be in time, but sound like he's playing, oh, so slow.
Right, right.
And I really like that concept.
Right. I guess at that point you were talking about high school, but then you made it into the New England Conservatory of Music.
Yeah, I was looking for, to my father's chagrin, of course, you know, that I was going to be a music major. You know, he wanted me to pursue something that was, you know, more sustainable. And he was right, of course. you know, and I applied to a number of music schools, Manhattan School of Music, Eastman School of Music, New England Conservatory. I got into all of them. You know, but at the time, New England had the first trumpet player of the Boston Symphony Orchestra, Armando Gitala, as a trumpet teacher. So I chose to go there because I figured I would have a chance to study with Armando Gitala.
Okay.
And over the course of my tenure, he had one student that was existing, great trumpet player who ended up playing on hundreds of Hollywood films, Tim Morrison, as his student. And then when Tim left after my sophomore year, he took another student, and that was it. So I never had a chance to even meet him, much less study with him.
Right, right.
Yeah.
Well, that's a letdown.
Yeah. Well, yeah, it was.
I mean, you've played, though, recorded with Jimmy Giuffre?
Jimmy Giuffre.
Giuffre, I'm sorry about that. Gunther Schuller?
Gunther Schuller, yes.
George Russell?
Yes.
And Jackie Bird?
Jackie Byard.
Byard, sorry.
Yes.
And excuse
as
me.
As well as Rand Blake and... I just came across an album that I did with Rand Blake, who was the director at the time in the late 70s, early 80s of what Gunther Schuller created as the Third Stream Department, which was melding different world musics into one effort. And Rand is still there, and he's a virtuosic pianist, but, you know, really, really high-level musical mind. And he put together this album Film Noir, which was based on the themes to a number of different film noir movies.
Okay,
so
I am an avid fan of film noir. When you go into like Joe Stafford and Duke Ellington, back in the day, that was at least from my understanding, that was more of a jazz instrumentation and a jazz chord progression versus improvisation, would you say? Or do you think that that's always been...
Well, it depends. I mean, if it's jazz, there's improvisation, but it depends upon, you know, the subgenre, if you will, to what degree the form dictates the underlying format for the improvisation.
Okay.
You know, as you'll see with our new project, Ornetticut, to a large extent, the improvisations aren't formally constrained.
Okay.
But if you're talking about straight-ahead jazz improvisation, you're playing over the form of a tune, of a song, of a composition.
Okay.
And you don't deviate from that. You know, creative practitioners can play a lot of things over that structure, but you're still playing over a structure. When you go into what we're doing with the music of Ornette Coleman, a lot of times we're not playing over a structure. We're playing over a feeling. We're playing over an idea. We're playing over a vibe.
That's what I was referring to. Even like more like a John McLaughlin, and when you get into the
like Mahavishnu,
yeah.
In a manner.
And even when you get into I believe that all music is a part of or a copy of something that was before it or is in the same time. And even when you get into rock and roll, like if you get into the band Cream, something like that, there are some structures I think that are improvisational that do have a jazz feeling to it in some sense, jazz and blues.
Yeah, I wouldn't draw a parallel between Cream and Ornette Coleman.
No, but I guess some influences of their music that led into rock and roll. Maybe I'm way off.
Well, you know,
that,
I mean, it's a big musical milieu.
Yeah, that's what I'm trying to, yep.
You know, that, you know, we all hear everything. What we pay attention to is discretionary. I've never been particularly inclined to pay a lot of attention to pop and rock and roll. I've been... you know, instrumental music and jazz resonated with me at a very early age. So, whereas, you know, I heard a lot of the iconic pop and rock tunes on the radio when I was a kid.
But that wasn't your big fancy.
It wasn't anything that like I would like stop and say, okay, well, you know, yeah, hey, you know, that's really good. You know, it just didn't really resonate. But it's still part of the musical fabric of what I heard at the time.
Right.
So, yeah.
And some other people that you've played with, Dizzy Gillespie.
We did a project when we had a very successful large ensemble when I was in school at New England Conservatory, I was one of the leaders of the group, but the primary mover and shaker, Pat Hollenbeck, who's still in Boston, still plays with the Boston Pops, as far as I know, great percussionist. He was really hell-bent on getting us involved in bigger things. And, you know, we went to the Notre Dame Jazz Festival and won it a couple of years in a row. And then he somehow interested the Wolf Trap Jazz Festival in having us as the featured ensemble for a number of different performances, and one of the performances was playing Dizzy Gillespie's big band repertoire.
Okay.
And we had Dizzy, Sonny Stitt, John Lewis, Slide Hampton.
Amazing.
Playing with us, and we played Dizzy Gillespie's big band.
Wow.
Compositions that were iconic, and it was great experience. Got to hang with Dizzy, and yeah.
You know, you'll be hearing me say wow a lot, Dan, because I'm trying to maintain myself. But when I hear some of these artists that you've performed with or that you have been an influence on you, it's amazing. You're a very fortunate person to work with the people that you work with and to perform what you, like I said, when I walked by, I was stopped in my tracks on Main Street and I had to walk back in and come and listen to you. And you played at the Village Vanguard.
Oh, yes. I played at the Village Vanguard with a couple of bands, but probably most notably when I was still like 20 years old, George Russell brought me down to play with his New York big band a couple of times. Yeah.
Amazing. Do you want to play something and talk a little bit about?
Why don't you play the second cutoff of this? It's a tune that I wrote that was inspired by Ornette Coleman and Don Cherry, and the title is appropriately OCDC. And it will be leading off the new CD. Of course, this is a rough mix, so some might not approve of the levels, but I like it.
Right here. No, that's all that matters.
Thank you.
Okay, so Chris, tell us a little bit about this and what you've been working on with this. And we're trying to actually get Patricia Dalton on the line right now.
Patricia Dalton Fennell.
Fennell.
Dalton is actually her stage last name, you know, as a professional, her last name is Fennell, and that's the name she was born with. But she's an extremely versatile, eclectic talent, if you will. You know, she's a worldwide expert on chronic disease, and
has written
a number of books, and a marvelous vocalist. You know, so those are the two opposite ends of the spectrum.
She's saving lives as well as creating beautiful music.
Exactly.
She does work in hospice
And she's been an incredible treasure in terms of production, and produced my last album, holiday album that did so well, Baby It's Cold Outside.
Yes.
And performs on it as well,
in a gender reverse of the song,
and had the idea of reversing genders on the actual song, Baby It's Cold Outside,
which is a classic song,
which caught the attention of numerous news outlets, and she ended up being interviewed on CNN, Carol Costello Show,
right?
Which I still have on my DVR, which I wish I could actually transfer to a DVD, but I don't know how to do that.
You had actually said, too, that on the Billboard, was it on Billboard or
Well, it was the Billboard, the jazz charts, jazz, yeah. Charts.
And what could you give us a little statistics on that?
Early December, we were just breaking the top 100. And then all of a sudden, within a week, we jumped up 40 places, 39 places to number 45 by Christmas Day.
Wow.
And that's kind of the gold standard, is to get in that top 50.
Right.
With like roughly two and a half weeks of airtime to have made that jump, I consider the effort to have been a success.
Oh, yeah. Well, by statistical standards, it definitely was.
Yeah.
And you're working on something now that isn't quite out now? Am I correct on that?
Well, you know, I wanted to do a band with music of Ornette Coleman, Don Cherry, and Albert Eiler for some time, and I started putting music together for this band a couple of years ago, and I decided to call the band Ornetticut.
There you go.
And Ornette had just died.
Okay.
And it seemed like the right time to do this, and we played about a half a dozen performances. We've got one coming up this week.
And that's what I also wanted, a good segue into this. You have some things coming up. If you want to let the listening audience know about this and what your whole atmosphere is, I guess the next one is the 26th.
It's the 26th. It's Thursday night. It's a series called Jazz at the Spring, and it's 110 Spring Street, the Spring Street Gallery, in Saratoga Springs,
okay,
New York. We start at 7:30. It's our core quartet, which consists of myself playing trumpet, this wonderful, amazing youngster, Adam Siegel, on alto saxophone, who plays great straight-ahead jazz, but when he adapts to this kind of improvisation, is just stellar. A couple of veterans of this type of improvisation that are well-celebrated, Michael Bisio on the bass, who, if you've never heard him play, is one of the most amazing bass players I've ever heard in my life, and the great Harvey Sorgan on the drums,
okay,
who has played with just about everybody. I mean, he can transcend a lot of genres, but he is especially wonderful in this context, as it's kind of like the entire concert will be his drum solo, so I don't have to give him a drum solo.
Right.
You know, that's just how improvisational he is, and how interactive he is. So, and the band, you know, we got into the studio on March 13th, and we spent about 8 hours recording the next album, which I'm calling our Ornetticut, a Chris Payson project. Wonderful and fortunate inclusion of being able to feature the great vibist composer, pianist Carl Berger, and his wife Ingrid Cerzo, who actually wrote lyrics for a number of Ornette's tunes and performed them with her, with him, to be included in the album. And you know, we're really excited to get this out. We're still in the final stages of mixing, you know, still adjusting some levels, but hopefully it will be out by the end of the summer or early fall.
Right.
And, you know, the basic title will be Ornetticate.
Nice.
You know, it's Ornette and etiquette.
Etiquette. Yeah. I gotcha. And then in the melee of all your musical career, you stopped for a bit and worked on your family, and I noticed that was a big part of it, too. Am I correct on that?
I did. I got derailed.
You know, what you call it?
Yeah, sidelined. I wasn't at, towards the end of the 80s, early 90s, I wasn't making much money playing music, and I was encouraged to, you know, basically within my extended family to go do something else. And it still is my primary source of income to this day, and ended up getting married to the woman I was dating at the time. And we had a couple of wonderful children, and just, it became very inconvenient to keep the trumpet up, and I kind of lost it for a decade or so. And
well, sometimes by that happening, it renews it when you do come back, and I think that says it.
Well, that's exactly what happened.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There's certain different, and it changes your influences and your perspective on life, I guess, in so many different ways.
Well, and you, you know, and you develop other passions. You know, I had a number of other passions, some of which I still have, and, you know, those are all good, too.
Right.
You know, it rounds out life.
Right. And with that being said, too, you now live locally around here.
I do.
We had talked about that briefly.
Yes.
Which is a convenience. And what? How long have you lived in this area?
Well, I've actually lived up here about 6 years.
Is it 6 years?
Yeah. And for jazz musicians, it's as difficult up here as it is any place.
Right.
You know, to find venues that will actually pay musicians what they're worth.
Right.
You know, what you heard on Friday night is probably not going to happen anymore because they just don't have the money.
Right.
You know, and, you know, the same thing with what I was doing a block away. You know, it's like for 2 years on Sunday afternoons, you know, I had world-class jazz musicians come in and play, you know, and try to negotiate, you know, fairly stingy financial circumstances to get people to show up and play, and managed to do it for 2 years, and then they decided that it was too loud for them, and they just want, you know, background wallpaper.
Right, right, right. Well, but I guess I've had people in here before, and they say that that's the true musician is the one that's willing to sacrifice, and I know sacrifice doesn't pay the bills, but still the fact that you definitely earned a fan in me, and... Mm-hmm.
Here we go.
There we go. We did get that phone call. So... we're going to take a...
I don't know if it is.
Is it?
It's not.
Oh, it's not. No.
It's a different phone call.
Can you...
It's your phone.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, I don't know.
Yeah.
Well, that was a...
but, okay. Yeah, I mean, I had high hopes for the place that you heard me in on Friday. And, you know, it's kind of discouraging, you know, especially since they have a nice piano.
Yep.
I had really, you know, I had floated the idea to several world-class pianists that live within a 50-mile radius of the area, you know, that we might be doing something regular, but he said, you know, just doesn't make sense financially for him, you know, and that's one of the sad things about the greater Albany, upper Hudson Valley areas, that there are few places that, in fact, almost no places that serve food or, you know, that have the financing to be able to pay musicians what they're worth.
Right. And you did play a couple years ago at the Bridge Street Theater, right?
I did, yes.
Yeah.
Actually, it was before I released this album, Random Acts of Kindness,
okay,
which you can certainly play a cut from. It was actually before I even planned on recording this, which was... I have a pile of original compositions that are unrecorded, but I got together at John Menegon's studio with couple of musicians I'd never played with before. It was a pianist that had just moved to the area, whose wife Sylvia teaches opera singing at Skidmore, and he was from Kansas City, and was an established pianist there, and somebody that I knew that had some that lived in Kansas City said, "Hey, you know, this guy's moving to your area. You ought to call him up and ask him to play." So I asked him to play. We got together and played a jam session over at John Menegon's, and this great young drummer. Well, I say young drummer because he's younger than me. I don't know, he might be 40.
Right.
But Dave Berger was there, and it was the first time playing with either of them, and it was just such a transcendent experience that I kind of thought to myself, you know, this should be a band. And, you know, just like Friday, that's going to be a band. We're going to play again at the Rivers Casino on July 29th.
Yeah, and could you, because I didn't catch by the end of the night, you had mentioned, but amazing guitarist, amazing drummer, all that was so great. If you could mention their names to me again.
I will. Let's go with this one first. Okay, this is bassist John Menegon, keyboardist Wayne Hawkins. Actually, he's playing piano on this because John had a great piano. We recorded in John's studio, and drummer Dave Berger with guitarist Mark Kleinhout.
Okay.
He's a banker by day, but spends all his extra time playing the guitar, and he's really great.
Oh, yes. What song did you want to go with on this one?
You know, I would go with Fragile Creature, which is a tune. It's number four on there that I composed, inspired by the great trumpeter Kenny Wheeler. But a local arranger has done a big band arrangement of it, and it's a pretty tune. I think everybody will like it.
That is so beautiful. Okay, Chris, we're going to be closing out here soon.
Sounds good.
We couldn't get your producer / co-musician on here at this point, but we had talked about getting possibly you back on at a later date, and we could talk about some more events that you have going on. But we wanted to remind everybody again, if we could, about your April 26th event that's going on, if you want to mention that
next
one more
Thursday
time.
It's Jazz at the Spring, and it's 7:30. It's my band Ornetticut, which is based on and inspired by the music of Ornette Coleman, Don Cherry, and Albert Eiler. And I have within the band the Core Quartet, some of the foremost established practitioners of that kind of music. You know, the great Michael Biccio on the bass and Harvey Sorgan on the drums, and this youngster on alto saxophone, Adam Siegel, who is just knocking the doors off of this kind of music. And the band is smoking. We just came out of the studio. We just recorded on March 13th. We're in the process of mixing the album, which will be out on Planet Arts, hopefully by the end of the summer or the early fall. Yeah, if you have the opportunity to come to Saratoga Springs on Thursday, we'll be starting at 7:30. The address is 110 Spring Street in Saratoga Springs, and the series is Jazz at the Spring. There's plenty of parking there. There's a church in the back where the parking lot is available. It's a nice, intimate space, and the band is smoking. You're going to really enjoy it if you come. Anyway, thank you very much.
Well, thank you, Chris. And if people want to check out your information, they can always go to your website.
Yes, it's www.chrispasin.com. chrispasin.com.
I checked it out. You can check it out too, and you can see all the information on there. It's a worthwhile thing to check out. Okay, well, we are going to close out here, Chris, and thank you once again for showing up and sharing your involvement in jazz, your history in jazz, your influences, playing some of your magnificent music. And yeah, I hope to see you again.
I hope so too.